Most colleges today ask you to leave your faith at the front door. But at Northwest University in Kirkland, their door is wide open. Listen as NU's Provost, Dr. Sarah Drivdahl, describes how their approach to academics encompasses the whole person.
Christian, higher education has many different purposes, but I would say the most important thing that a university can do is to help students find their call and serve Christ to their fullest potential. And that is something that Northwest University is in the Ivy League at doing, that we are so good at helping students figure out who they are, learn the information they need, become the people they need to be to really advance the kingdom of God. And when I'm in a classroom at Northwest University, we get to talk about not just this topic, but we get to talk about how Christ relates to that topic. We get to teach the whole person.
NU's application deadline for fall classes has been extended to June 1st. A Christ-centered college experience is still possible, and generous scholarships are still available. Apply today at northwestu.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. A truly odd story of a police chase that stopped in Seattle, but it included running over a bunch of homeless tents. So why did it in fact stop? And by the way, why'd the dude come back? Yeah, a lot of weird details. That's what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
I mean, there are so many details in the story that are just weird. And it leaves Seattle police looking for a driver who they haven't been able to identify at this point. I haven't seen any information as to what the driver looks like or any real details on the car other than it was gray and an Acura SUV. Now, I suppose that's better than having nothing, but my guess is the car is stolen. This driver, according to police, intentionally ran over various tents, homeless encampments, on a downtown Seattle sidewalk. And apparently he did it in front of police officers on Tuesday night. The location is just outside of the King County Courthouse where there are just a ton of tents. They stopped their chase after this vehicle, after they saw him drive over the tents, when they realized that the tents were empty at the time that he drove over them. And since that then becomes I'm pretty sure it still counts as a felony, but it was a nonviolent one. They stopped their chase because, number one, they're not allowed under law to continue to chase. And under SPD policy, they're not allowed to continue to chase. In fact, that policy is going to stay the same after June 1st when the initiative goes into effect. So they stop, they go back over to the scene of the crime. At that point, you know, there are obviously other officers there because they were the ones who radioed to say, everything's fine here, there's no victims. But at that point, for some reason, the same driver appears to have come back later to that location and then opened fire at those tents.
There were people at the scene when this occurred, and officers attempted to talk to people, and nobody wanted to come forward and talk to officers.
So no one wanted to come forward and talk to officers. So what does this mean? Well, it means, number one, we don't have a motive. I'm assuming it also means that this was a targeted incident, that this was not just some, because at first when you hear some guy drives over tents intentionally, you would think to yourself, certainly I did, okay, so he was maybe someone who was sick and tired of the homelessness crisis, decided to clean up the streets, quote unquote, himself, obviously in an illegal and dangerous way. But if he comes back and then he fires at them and then no one wants to talk, that could indicate that they know who the person is. This might actually be a drug dealer or some issue related to drug dealing, because what a lot of folks will not tell you, because they on the activist side and on the city side want to, you know, justify not sweeping. But what they won't tell you is oftentimes, especially in downtown Seattle, you've got drug dealers who are using their tent to stash their drugs and they're just selling. Sometimes they are resupplying their other drug dealers who are out walking the community, selling their product. Other times they're literally going up to these tents and making a purchase. I've seen it happen. And police officers have made arrests in which they allege that this has occurred. And there's plenty of photos and video evidence. So this is not an unknown thing. I'm willing to bet that that's what we're talking about here. Just based on the limited information I have. Obviously, if we get more information, it could change my view. But this is what it sounds like on the surface, which of course makes it even more understandable, I suppose, from the perspective of someone who might become a future victim of this drug dealer if he speaks to the cops or she speaks to the cops. Now, the weird thing is, they said that he comes back and he fires gunshots, but when they did the investigation, police weren't able to find any shell casings. They weren't able to find any property damage on top of just not being able to get any witness to go on record. Something is odd here. Was someone there to clean up the evidence, the shell casings, pick them up? Who knows? Did he fire into the air and he was further away and that's why you didn't see any damage or you weren't able to find the shell casings? Don't know. And they don't give us a license plate number. They don't give us a description of the suspect. They don't give us a better description of the SUV other than gray Acura. And they just simply say, well, if you have any information, call 911. Again, it's not the cop's fault, but this is not really a story that has many details. It just has a lot of questions without any answers. So when we get them, we'll deliver them. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Anti-Semitism.
The head of an organization that I'm actually not a fan of, but certainly can appreciate that they're having a moment, the ADL, a moment of realization. They're coming to the realization that the party that they have been defending in such a partisan and in many cases despicable way, they have a big problem with anti-Semitism, massive problem. And you saw after October 7th, Jonathan Greenblatt, who again was the reliable progressive voice who oftentimes would use Judaism and Israel just to go after conservatives that he didn't like, you started to see him change his tone a little bit. And then he started to change his tune a little bit. Because he realized that he was part of a party that absolutely hates him and really was just tokenizing him. Now, he's still a Democrat, and I don't think he's going to stop defending Democrats. But at least he's going to stop doing some of the work for progressives. So he went on Squawk Box today. It's on CNBC. And he talked about this report that the ADL put out, a report card for universities, specifically being judged on anti-Semitism. Now, how they judge anti-Semitism, I think, is going to be pretty clear, right? I mean, they're talking about the kinds of treatment that Jews on campus get. And they looked at many of the high-profile cases. But to be clear, they missed a whole lot. They missed a whole lot. This is not a complete list because UW, for example, doesn't show up at all. So, in fact, no Washington school shows up on their report card. So this is an incomplete list, but hopefully soon it will end up getting completely filled. And so we're not just focusing on the schools that, frankly, we've been talking a lot about. Harvard, for example, Cornell, and maybe this is just a rolling list that they're going to continue to update. Maybe I'll reach out to them and say, hey, remember the UW here? They're pretty nasty. And so he goes on and he's talking to the host, Andrew Ross Sorkin, and pointed out, hey, my son attends one of the schools that got a really low grade on this report card. And that should be a warning for parents and students that you might have your kid at a school that mistreats them simply because they're Jewish.
What I'm saying is go in eyes wide open. You need to know and your student needs to prepare for what's going to happen. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. I spent the day yesterday at Harvard Law School. This is arguably the top law school, not just in the United States, in the world. And the stories that I heard from the Jewish students were abominable. I heard about a student government, you know, literally throwing the rules, you know, out the window in order to pass anti-Israel resolutions. I heard about Jewish students literally. Who have been isolated, alienated, and I heard about an administration that's not helping them, so not responding to emails, not responding to phone calls, etc.
What do the administrators say when you issue a grade like this?
You know, look, we worked with Claudine Gay at Harvard, and we're talking to Alan Garber now. Some of these administrators, and I've got, you know, in emails in my inbox this morning from university presidents saying this, and from parents saying this is unfair. This doesn't adequately represent life at my school. But you know what? If you don't have the right policies, Becky, if you haven't taken the right actions, if you're not supporting your Jewish students, the grade speaks for itself.
Well, you know what? You got to do more than just put out a grade, though. And that's the truth here. And this is where it comes to parents and students to get more involved. Like, if this stuff is going on campus, and kudos to the ones who have already done this, you got to step up and say something, and you got to say something many, many times, and you have to say it loudly and clearly. You don't always have to do it with your name attached, because I understand why parents or students might feel uncomfortable doing so. They do not want to be targeted. And I would be concerned about being targeted as a Jew on campus speaking up. I would. So I get it. But there are ways to reach out to media outlets. I prefer you do it to me, but you can do it to any media outlet you want. Tell us what's going on. Take screenshots of what's going on, videos of what's going on, record audio of what's going on so we can expose this stuff. The same way we helped expose Ian Golash of that West Seattle school, Chief Self. He's clearly an anti-Semite according to all of his opinions. I think they all qualify as anti-Semitism. He's a horrible teacher. He has influence over kids, and it took just one parent for me to break this story. No one would have known who Ian Golash was, including myself, had not one parent send me an email and tell me what was going on and then get me to look into this teacher. Had I not gotten that email, that tip, this story would never have gotten any news, any coverage. That's the reality. And how many times have we covered stories out in Bellevue where parents are talking about how their kids are tormented simply because they're being called out for being Jewish or for supporting Israel? We're hearing these stories from parents, and we're going to continue to shine a giant spotlight on it. Because if you don't shame this kind of behavior, it's only going to get worse. And frankly, you've got some educators who subscribe to the same ridiculous radical views about Israel than the activists. I'm sure some of the people who are marching in support of Hamas are teachers. We covered a teacher not too long ago who was trying to help raise funds for an anti-Semitic organization. We've got the story up at KTGH.com. It's absurd. But understand, for some other educators, or staff members in positions of power, or school board members, they're just too scared to say anything because they don't want to be bullied or shamed or maybe even physically attacked as a result of saying, okay, this rhetoric is going a little bit too far, let's dial it back. They're scared. And they'll be less scared if they know more of you who want to call this out are there to back them. If you're not organized on this, it's just going to get worse. Cool, a letter grade of a school gives a school some bad press and maybe can inspire some people to get organized. But the truth is, this is going to come from parents on an individual school-by-school level or students on a student-by-student level. Needs to be called out, and I'll certainly help call it out. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. It's the Jason Rant Show. Good news for those of you who live in the 28th Legislative District here in Washington. That's Steilacoom, University Place. You've got DuPont all the way into Lakewood and JBLM. You actually now have someone who could represent you in the Senate. Not an extremist like the Democrat Twyna Nobles. You've got someone who actually cares about the community without all of the fringe. Her name is Maya Espinoza. She's an entrepreneur. She's a local mom. You probably know her best for taking on education as a really important issue. She previously ran for the superintendent of public instruction. She faced an onslaught of attacks and dollars from Democrats, but now she wants to represent the 28th district, and she joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's glad to be back with you.
So being a state senator means you're going to cover, obviously, way more than education. So let's talk about something other than education, because I think everyone kind of knows where you stand and you've got a really strong record there. Outside of education, what is the big issue you think that's impacting the 28th district?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is crime. And right behind that, maybe, you know, sometimes it edges out, cost. The cost of everything right now is so out of control. And for these limousine liberals, they are out of touch with everyday people. And I think that's the number one issue that, you know, people are concerned about. Certainly, you know, it seems like for our family, the more money we make, the more expensive everything has gotten. You just can never make enough, can never keep up. And we're being nickeled and dimed. I mean, we know it's from the government that is making things incredibly more expensive. I don't know how long they're going to run on some excuse, you know, about the economy, but cost is number one. And then when you combine what's going on with crime in our communities, I mean, city of Tacoma, city of Lakewood, Seattle, Olympia, these cities, and you've seen it, Jason, they are completely overrun by crime. Yes, there's an element of, you know, homelessness and housing that needs to be addressed. Yes, obviously, drugs, mental health needs to be addressed. But this rampant crime that is left completely unchecked, organized retail theft, you know, putting workers in harm's way is unacceptable. And this is, you know, these are two areas that I am really, really focused on, in addition, of course, to education.
Yeah, and all those things you just mentioned, there's a significant overlap, right? And when it comes to crime in particular, and by the way, I just love the irony of spending more money to live in a community that is increasingly less safe. It's just, it's remarkable. And of course, you can tie all of that directly to Democrat policies here in Washington State. Twyna Nobles,
direct correlation,
is someone who's very clearly not pro-police. She's very clearly in line with the fringiest of fringe when it comes to so-called criminal justice reforms. So what is something that you can jump on immediately if you're in this position?
Well, actually, one of the things that my opponent voted against was restoring police pursuit. So that, of course, is one of the very first things on the top of my list. But, you know, passing a bill is one thing. We have a lot of work to do in terms of restoring faith in our police, you know, and making sure that they feel like part of the community with us. So one of the first things that I want to do is change the narrative around policing in our communities. And, you know, I touched on this briefly, but also the point about, you know, mental health and drug addiction. There are so many things right now that we can do at the state level to address housing policies that are very top of my list, because I think that goes directly into the hearts of, you know, people that are experiencing homelessness, people that are not able to pay rent or make their mortgage because of this crunch in housing. So one of the first things that I want to do is address policing, to reiterate that point, but then right behind that again is just addressing housing homelessness by way of some of these housing policies that have made it prohibitive to build. There's actually an issue going on in the 28th legislative district, if anyone, you know, has been paying attention to this one. It's one of these you know, kind of not in my backyard things where, yes, we need to build housing, but not in my backyard. And so being a member of this community and knowing, you know, the people, the players in these areas that are really going to be able to push something forward so that everybody gets a seat at the table, everybody feels listened to. But we do address this issue of not having enough housing, and making housing more affordable is one of the next, you know, things at the top of my list.
Isn't a big piece of this, though, we overregulate and put fee after fee after fee after fee on developers because they've got money and localities want to take it. And as a result, they do what everyone knows they're going to do. They'll either pass along the cost to us or they'll just choose not to build. And when you're looking at a city like Seattle, for example, or maybe even Lakewood, which is going through its own crime crisis, they might say, okay, it's not really worth the investment at this point because I don't know whether or not this community is going to get on the right path or they're going to continue to go down the wrong path. Whether or not it's the fault of the locals doesn't matter. It's about making a smart investment.
Exactly. And it does all trace back to the Growth Management Act. This is something that really restricted the authority of you know, local jurisdictions to be able to build housing that's right for their communities. And when you are, you know, trying to align developers that see a potential investment, this is exactly how you get these kind of McMansions in super small, dense areas. You know, that frankly is not real aligned with the rest of the community, but it's the only way that something can pencil out. And if you're a, you know, new family, young family, or, you know, one working parent kind of household, it is really hard to afford some of these houses that are coming to market at the $800,000 level, mm-hmm. you know, in the middle of a city like Lakewood. It's just absurd. So in my city, I've seen, you know, more and more cars in the driveway, and we know that more people are living on top of themselves, but we have got to come up with a solution, and addressing the Growth Management Act is one of the easiest ways to do that.
Talking with Maya Espinoza, she's running for the state Senate in legislative district number 28. That includes Lakewood, University Place, Steilacoom, JBLM, we're talking about Faircrest, all the cities in between, DuPont, I forgot. One last question for you. And by the way, her website is mayaforus.com. It's M-A-I-A, the number for us.com. Your last name is Espinoza, and it's my understanding, according to Democrats, that means you can't actually be a Republican. What's your response to that?
I cannot believe the absurdity and audacity of these Democrats in Washington State. If you look at what's going on in Central Washington, gerrymandering mm-hmm. the only Latina state senator in Eastern Washington out of her district, you know, this is someone who is a farm worker. They will do, you know, they'll stop at nothing to disrupt the narrative. And so you can believe that they are hell-bent on keeping me from getting into the Senate. But I will say, a Republican held this seat for 50 years mm-hmm. before Senator Nobles took it. So, and she only won by 550 votes. So we can win this. And when I ran for OSPI, I actually won this district and the neighboring one, which is even more blue. We will win with some hard work and, you know, encouragement. People need a glimmer of hope these days. So I just hope to bring that.
I love it. And no kidding, they do need a glimmer of hope. And I think that's what you bring to this district for the first time since Twine and Nobles actually took over. So I hope people will support you. I hope they'll check out your website. Again, it's mayaforus.com, M-A-I-A, the number four, US.com. Best of luck. And I'm sure you'll be on in the coming months as we get closer to the elections.
I appreciate it, Jason. You're the best. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Again, mayaforus.com. Friend of the show from when she was running for superintendent. Great candidate. I hope people will check her out. Again, mayaforus.com. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local.
Join me weekdays, noon to 3, as I bring on top conservative voices to talk about how this political climate will impact you. I'm Guy Benson, and every day from noon to 3, you'll hear the most powerful names in D.C. and beyond with insightful conservative commentary that informs and entertains. Get ready for smart, fast-paced political insights from the right, from someone who knows the ins and outs of D.C. and how it affects you out here in the other Washington. I'm Guy Benson, heard weekdays, noon to 3, on AM 770 KTTH.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Tacoma because there is a pretty disgusting thing happening at Burney Elementary School. The water that comes out of the faucets and the drinking fountains, yeah, I mean, it's technically water, but it's got, let's just call it an added supplement to it that's brown. It's gross. They have discolored water, and they've been having discolored water apparently since the middle of February, according to Cairo 7 TV. They spoke with some parents, Andrea and Emily, and they found this out sort of on their own as they were just washing their hands. They happened to be in school.
Went to wash our hands, and it came out brown. So if there's something in that water that they shouldn't be drinking, what's going to happen when one of those students is sick or ends up possibly dying? What are we going to do now?
Got to have access to clean drinking water and being able to wash your hands. And like they're using hand sanitizer, which, I mean, that's good for a temporary thing. But at some point, you got to like actually wash your hands.
Well, yeah, relax, lady. Okay, we don't need water to survive. What's that we do? We do need water. Okay. Okay, never mind. They have a good point. Now, the school says it's coming from the taps inside the round building on the north side of campus, per Cairo 7 TV. They couldn't find out specifically what that building was. But this issue came up at a recent school board meeting where, you know, parents stepped up and said, okay, this is a problem. And part of the issue is that the parents didn't really know about it until it started to spread within the community of students and other parents, telling other parents, telling other parents about it. And they said, just as you know, Cairo 7 was trying to get to the bottom of why this was happening, that they don't really feel like they've been heard here. And unfortunately, they're not really giving at the school level a reasonable or even sustainable solution to this problem. They've only got something done in the short term, which is to have students access filtered water by going into the main building. So they're saying, just don't use the water here in this part of the campus, go into the main building.
I am here every day.
You guys haven't gotten any email from the school district?
Nothing regarding the water, absolutely not. Nope. The whole part about filtered water in the main building. You want first graders and anybody who's accessing the library to be accompanied by a staff member who has a key. So how is that supposed to work all day long when you have class that you're supposed to teach?
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. And by the way, just to tell you about the lack of communication, parents didn't receive an email regarding the brown water issue until yesterday afternoon. And presumably the only reason why they got that email was because they knew that Cairo 7 TV was working on this story. That is ludicrous. It's insane. Now, the funny thing is, they're still downplaying all of this. They put out a statement to Tacoma Public Schools saying, we're aware of the concerns regarding the discolored water. We want to assure everyone that we're taking this matter seriously. We've sent water samples to a lab for testing, and we're working closely with Tacoma Public Utilities and experts to ensure the safety of our students and staff. TPU has been conducting water flushing in the area and has expressed that Tacoma's water meets all federal and state drinking water regulations and is safe to drink. Even the brown, muddy water? All students and staff access to filtered water in the main building. All students and staff have access to filtered water in the main building. We're committed to providing a safe and healthy blah, 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 blah. So this is clearly unacceptable. It has to be fixed immediately. And this is now a perfect moment for parents to realize how much power they have. Because this is an issue that I think pretty much everyone can get behind. There's not going to be a single parent who says this isn't a big deal. There's not going to be a single parent who says, you know, it gives them some extra minerals maybe they didn't have access to. It builds up an immunity. No one's going to do that. Everyone's going to be equally outraged by this. And so now it's just on a few parents to step up and start organizing and start making a really big stink. Because at the end of the day, if they don't do that, this is not going to go away. Because they've already seen how the school district doesn't take this seriously enough up until this moment. And the second that they realize that all of these parents are starting to get together, are starting to organize, are starting to push back, well, guess what? It becomes not just a political issue for the school board, not just a nuisance for the school district, but it becomes really, really, really bad press for everyone involved. And they don't want to have to deal with even more coverage. These parents have so much more power. At least this isn't even a controversial issue. You know, you're not going to war over curriculum that maybe some liberals like. This is something that's just about basic health. Basic needs of kids. This is very winnable. I hope they actually get together. And by the way, when you get together and you win this battle, then you're going to feel pretty great, which is going to empower you to take on other issues as well. You may not win all of them, but I guarantee you're going to feel good when you win this one. And you will win this one. You just have to do the work. Meanwhile, a judge decided that a 17-year-old should go on home detention. A 17-year-old out of Renton who, according to the prosecutors and police, worked with two 15-year-olds to commit a robbery, take police on a police chase. This was one of the juvenile crime sprees that we talked about last week. Two 15-year-olds and a 17-year-old. And this is the group of kids who were arrested in the Highlands. So they had the first appearance this week, yesterday afternoon. And the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office said, look, guys, they're dangerous. You cannot let them out. We have the 17-year-old on robbery, possession of a stolen car, possession of a stolen firearm. We have two 15-year-olds getting hit with robbery, stealing of a motor vehicle without permission. That's called just car theft. And yet, two separate judges in this case, but one handling the 17-year-old said, oh, no, we're going to put this kid on home detention.
They just crashed. On foot. T.A., Albertsons. We're running.
So the dash cam video ended up showing the officers chasing these three teens after they crashed their car that was stolen in an Albertson parking lot right near Hazen High School. And here's the kicker in all of this, and it's what should make you so upset. And later on in the show, by the way, different city, but we're going to talk with the mayor of Federal Way because they're having a surge in juvenile crime and a surge, unfortunately, in juvenile victims to crime. Of course, last week we had the death, the shooting of a two-year-old kid. But in this case, Renton PD say they recovered a loaded AK-47. Okay. The boys are accused of robbing a victim at gunpoint. So why is it that the 17-year-old is on home detention? The 15-year-olds, thankfully, are actually being detained. But why not the 17-year-old? Because if anything, it was the 17-year-old who was the one who coerced the other two kids into it. That would be my guess if the allegations are true. That would be my guess. Unbelievable. You all tell us on the left that you're anti-gun. You want to ban guns. This kid's got an AK-47, according to Renton PD. And you think a 17-year-old, who might, as far as we know, be a month away from becoming 18, doesn't deserve to be detained. Oh, my God. Who are they serving, these judges? Who are they serving? They're not serving you. They're not serving the needs of the community. They're not keeping us safe. I don't care if there might have been certain circumstances in which the two 15-year-olds were technically slightly more dangerous than the 17-year-old. They were all allegedly involved in the same thing. All of them. They decided to do something incredibly dangerous if the allegations are true. Police say they took them on a dangerous high-speed chase. They ended up crashing. Possibly could have killed someone. Luckily, that didn't happen. And yet we give them a pass. Way to go, King County. And finally, there's some drama in the city of Burien again, all between the city government as well as the police department, which is really the King County Sheriff's Office. There was a move that was recently made. It just got published. An email went out last month asking Ted Bowe, who is the chief. Again, because it's run by King County Sheriff's Office, we'll just call him the chief of the Burien Police, but he's really a King County employee. He's not a Burien employee. But what the city manager wanted to happen was remove Ted Bowe from that position because of the, frankly, ridiculous directive coming from the King County Sheriff's Office and likely Executive Dow Constantine for them not to enforce their ordinance against camping. Homeless camping ban. It makes total sense. It seems to be in line with other ordinances that have been allowed. And by the way, at the end of the day, a week and a half from now, you're going to have oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court, Grants Pass, Oregon v. Johnson, that will dictate whether or not these kinds of ordinances are legal or constitutional to begin with. And our guess, our best guess is that they're going to say, yes, this is legal. Now, obviously, we don't know. I've got an editorial on this for Fox News on Monday going through all of it. If you want to check it out Monday morning. But at the end of the day, this is all going to be decided elsewhere anyway. But because of the decision not to enforce the law, Adolfo Ballon, or Ballon, the city manager, said he lost trust in the chief and wants him gone. But they can't just fire him because, as I said, he works for King County. He doesn't work for Burien. Sheriff Patty Cole Tindall has now come out saying, no, you can't do that. This is illegal retaliation. It's actually not illegal retaliation. I don't know what she's talking about there. But she's saying it's retaliation against her office because she ordered the deputies contracted to work there not to enforce the new laws. Well, but that's not an illegal retaliation. It's not like Bo complained about something and then, because they're truly retaliating, they end up trying to kick him out of his job. They're simply saying we lost trust in you. Now, there's some context to this story that I'm going to follow up on. I have to look at some documents because it's not just as crystal clear as I think we need to make it for you guys to follow it, at least initially. I think there's some details here from the city's side that's important, but I also know that this was an unforced error. The city of Burien, I'm on their side as it relates to the homeless ordinance, but I also know that there are a lot of people within the King County Sheriff's Department, not necessarily in Burien, I don't know, but within the department, I'm certain that people really like Ted Bo. And I have to assume that the folks who are working inside Burien for the sheriff also like him. That's my guess. Now, at the same time, he was certainly known as being quote unquote pro cop. Like, he's not this liberal who happens to be in law enforcement. That's at least how I've been told he acts, that he's not this hardcore liberal. So it seems to me that the unforced error is going after a guy who is probably liked by the people who work with him. And now all the city of Burien has done is turned this into, from a police perspective, it's turned it into, instead of the city against the sheriff, it's the city against a cop. And that's going to turn people off. Now, to the extent it turns people off that they don't do their job, I doubt that it's going to get that far. But you're taking a step in that direction where they're at least now seeing the sheriff stand up for one of them, and that's going to earn points with them, rightly so. So this didn't need to happen. And again, we know that in a week and a half, there's going to be a Supreme Court case that will change all of this. And it doesn't matter because, you know, they'll point out, I think, at the city, hey, we sent this request a month ago and it only got out today. Doesn't matter. It helps explain just from a timing perspective about how this isn't retaliation, right? Because it's been less than a month since this ordinance was, you know, shot down by the sheriff's office, but that it came out yesterday, this email, gives off the impression that it's a direct response to what the sheriff did. And doesn't say, I was told that this email actually came out a month ago. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have the wrong dates. But I do know that there's some additional context here that's going to come out in the coming days. I think I'll be the one who breaks it. And maybe it gives a little bit of a slightly different look. Maybe it gives a little bit more understanding where the city's coming from. But at the end of the day, you go after a cop and you upset cops. Yeah, that's never a good sign. That's never a good thing. And it's always going to be seen as an unforced error. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Don't forget, if you owe money to the IRS, make sure you go with our friend, our sponsor, Greg Nunn of Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Google NUNN, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. If you owe money to the IRS, you got to be proactive. Greg Nunn's going to help. It's the Jason Rand Show.
Join me weekdays, noon to 3, as I bring on top conservative voices to talk about how this political climate will impact you. I'm Guy Benson, and every day from noon to 3, you'll hear the most powerful names in D.C. and beyond with insightful conservative commentary that informs and entertains. Get ready for smart, fast-paced political insights from the right, from someone who knows the ins and outs of D.C. and how it affects you out here in the other Washington. I'm Guy Benson, heard weekdays, noon to 3, on AM 770 KTTH.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed, you do normally get to pick the news, but because of an assignment I'm on for the Laura Ingraham Show, I picked the news today, and I'm going with a UC Berkeley law professor who decided to confront some truly odious students who decided to take over his backyard dinner that was supposed to be a celebration for students ahead of graduation next month. Catherine Fisk is a professor. Her husband, Erwin Chemerinsky, is the law school dean. They both happen to be Jewish, which puts a target on their backs from people like a small handful that decided to RSVP with the intent of disruption. And you knew it was intended to disrupt because they brought, according to the report, their own handheld microphone. So we know precisely what this was all about. So you've got this pretty odious situation unfolding in which they're just trying to have their dinner, and then all of a sudden this horrible person takes to this, you know, pretend stage and starts just railing on Israel and talking about how, you know, heroic she is for standing up for innocent Palestinians.
Hello, everyone. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Peace and blessings upon you all. Tonight, we are gathered here in the name of commemorating our
now
final few weeks as law students.
This is my house.
Tonight is also the last night of the holy month of Ramadan.
So you can already tell this is going to get tense. Now, someone is filming this. I believe it was being filmed by someone who was in on all of the protesting, just based on when the video started and what the video captured. But let's continue.
Where millions of Muslims around the world fast, not only from material sustenance.
So at this point, the professor grabs the microphone and has her hand around the protester's shoulder.
Stop touching her. We have attorneys.
Okay, you don't have to get
Please leave our house. You are guests at our house.
This is our First Amendment right.
No, it's not your First Amendment right, you nitwit. It's not your First Amendment right. You're in the person's house. You don't have a First Amendment right to disrupt events. Figure that out. You're going to law school at UC Berkeley? You dummy.
The National Lawyers Guild has informed us this is our First Amendment, right?
Yeah, the National Lawyers Guild, by the way, that's the group that goes around trying to make it so that Antifa thugs don't have to pay any price for when they get violent. That's what we're talking about here. And of course, they're involved in this.
And they are aware of this. They're not wrong.
This is my house.
This is my house, and you're no longer welcome here.
You are not welcome.
Okay, you can call the police.
No, I don't prefer to call the police.
I'm giving...
She just grabs it. Good.
Just
you know what?
Leave if you don't want to be.
I do not endorse violence at all. But I will say these people are very punchable. And soon someone's going to punch them right in the face. And of course, the person who does the punching will get in trouble rather than the imbecile who is begging to be hit right in the face. These people are horrible. They want you to think that they're on some sort of moral high ground. They are not. These are insufferable, progressive nitwits who are all narcissists. They don't care about a single person in, quote unquote, Palestine. They just like saying that. They like how they come off when they stand in solidarity with their Palestinian brothers and sisters. They don't care about innocent life. Do you ever hear them, condemning Hamas for rape and murder? No, what you hear oftentimes is them defending it. So please spare me.
Leave my house.
You said manhandling. That's gendered language. I'm calling the woke police on you.
Be here.
You are not invited for this purpose.
We are talking about Ramadan and the holy month of Ramadan as Muslim students. We refuse to break our fast on the blood of Palestinian people. The UC has committed sending $2 billion to weapons manufacturers.
We're just giving a speech about Ramadan.
Well, you don't get to give a speech about anything. How about that? How about she's giving you a speech to get out of her house? And if you don't, yeah, you're breaking the law. I hope she gets hit with trespassing charges.
If you can grab me the mic back, I will leave.
Good. Okay.
But will you please give me the mic back? Let me take it.
God, I hate her.
Turn it off.
Please turn it off. And please leave my house. You're not a guest. You're a guest in my house.
I know, but 40,000 people are dying.
Oh. Well, why don't you go over there and help?
And if you don't wish to be here, please leave my house.
Talking to some other students who are standing up.
Please leave our house.
I encourage everyone.
It is incredibly rude of you to abuse our hospitality in this way.
Yeah, they don't care.
There's a genocide going on.
Oh, there's a genocide going on.
You haven't done anything about divestment.
Please leave my house.
You haven't done anything about divestment.
I don't invest in anything. I'm not going to argue with you. This is a party. The law school is not invested in anything.
Islamic Relations SF will be hearing how you pulled a Muslim woman's scarf.
Oh, you care, San Francisco. They're going to hear about what you did. Oh, no. Shocking that these people want to target the Jews. The two Jews they're targeting. Unbelievable. I hate these people. They really are loathsome. They really are. And shame on anyone who enables this kind of garbage. Oof. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. And by the way, it continues. Actually, I'll play just a little bit more because I want people to know where these imbeciles stand and how they act.
Putting your hands on my hijab is unacceptable.
Oh, it's unacceptable. How dare, it's unacceptable to touch my hijab, but it's totally acceptable for me to disrupt your party by calling all you Jews murderers.
My arm, you will hear from KRSF. You will.
No one cares. No one cares, lady.
And the fact that your wife was able to assault a Muslim Palestinian hijabi student is not great.
Please leave our house. We are leaving. Please leave our house now.
People.
We're leaving.
My home. I had a home in Palestine too.
No, you didn't. Shut up. You didn't have anything in Palestine. Shut up. I cannot stand these people. And you know what? I hope more and more and more people see this video because I know they think they're coming off as the hero. They're not coming off as the hero. They're coming off as absolute imbeciles, losers. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And again, God forbid they ever call out Hamas. They'll never do that. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. It's the Jason Rancho.